Accession number 31699, reel 1.
Stuart Underdown, reel 1. If we could start with when and where you were born.
I was born in Guildford on the 27th of April, 24, at Topcroft, Stoke Road, Guildford.
Did you grow up in the...
No, well, we moved to Ealing. I didn't know much. I didn't know anything about Guildford, but we moved to Ealing in about 19. I should think it'd be about 1928, something like that. My father was a teacher, and he was a teacher at Clarke's College, now defunct, and he got moved from Guildford branch to Ealing branch. And we moved to Ealing, and I can't remember the first place we stayed at. It was a flat, and we moved to 9 Sutherland Avenue in West Ealing, and then we stayed there till about 19. I can remember we were there in 1930, and. We must have moved about 1933 to, I think it was Briarbank Road, also in Ealing. And we stayed there only a matter of, well, just under a year when we moved to Catford. My father then, it was a new branch if I remember rightly, and he was transferred to Catford, headmaster. And... from there, from Ealing, we moved to, as I say, Catford, Riverview, 69 Riverview Park. And we stayed there, at least I stayed there, for about 72 years in the same house. I was educated at in Catford at St Dunstan's College. And I stayed there from 1934 to 1939, and we were I was evacuated to Reigate with a school, to a little place, well, a big house called Isbell's down on the Reigate Road. I was billeted out, of course, and. The whole thing was a bit of a disaster. I learnt nothing. I spent nearly 12 months, I suppose, down there.
How did the evacuation process work?
How did it work? I can't remember a lot about it except, you know, the label in your lapel, a gas mask, a cardboard box. And I know we went from Forest Hill Station by electric train. I thought to myself, well, we're not going very far. There was a bit of a train buff in those days. And I got in the carriage, and I remember there's a certain type of fitting on the window, and I thought, oh, these don't travel further than Brighton. So eventually we ended up at Reigate Station, where we all assembled the other side of the road, the main road, outside the station. And then we were sort of distributed to our various billets. But about the evacuation and the what I learnt at the school was minimal. I used to come home at weekends on my bicycle, and I could do Reigate home door to door in 55 minutes. You wouldn't do it in a car now, but there you are. I skidded on the tram lines in Croydon and fell over and bashed my bike up, and well, I wasn't run over, but I survived.
How were you billeted?
I was billeted with a family in Reigate. I can't remember the name of the road. It's a doesn't ordinary semi-detached house to start with, and. I remember this, one of the sons was At Dunkirk, because the Dunkirk evacuation of Dunkirk took place while I was down there, and I can remember they were very, very worried. But he did come back. In our time off, we used to go down to Reigate, where the railway crossing gates were, and watch the troop trains coming in about every 5 minutes. And ambulance coaches. You could see the men inside the carriages, nurses, and they went to Red Hill. And from there, I imagine they were taken to various hospitals. But the engine, I heard afterwards that the engine changeover was so fast, they couldn't get rid of the clinker off their engines when they cleaned them out for the return journey down to the docks. But it all passed off. And then I then moved on to a big house in the Reigate Road, and I was with another chap there, and well, we didn't get on to terribly well with the people that owned the place. They were a bit sort of hoity-toity, you know, and so they had servants, and we more or less got thrown out. But I can't remember much about it. I know I had a fight with the bloke, the chap I was with, for some reason. Can't tell you what it was now, but there was a disagreement, and we got chucked out. But then my father said, well, you're not learning anything down there. You're wasting your time. I was 16. And he said, you're coming home. Because being a First World War man, he knew what happened after the war, with so many unemployed, people that couldn't get jobs. He said, you're going to come home, and he said, you're going to get a job. He said, I've seen too many men on the streets doing nothing. So he said, well, he more or less marched me around to Lloyd's Bank and for an interview, which I passed. And I joined Lloyd's Bank on a temporary basis. And I stayed with them for nearly 44 years. And my service career counted as time in the bank, which was very, very good. I think I started off with 30 bob a week, nothing more than that. But 30 bob went a long way in the 1940s, I suppose.
Had you had your own particular job aspirations as you were going through school before?
No, not at all. Didn't know what I wanted to do. Found it afterwards I really ought to have gone into engineering. But I stayed in the bank. And a damn good job I did too, under the present circumstances.
How would you, just going back a bit, how had you enjoyed school?
Didn't like it at all. And when it came to sports, that was the pits as far as I was concerned. I hated sport, and I've hated sport ever since. The only thing I look at on the television is snooker. No, I could never get on with sport.
Did that cause any issues with your father being a teacher?
Yeah, I think, you know, they put me to this decent school and I wasn't learning anything. I realised afterwards they were really wasting their money, but never mind. It stood me in good stead. Because I think because I'd gone to St Dunstan's, he got me in the bank. And I rose up, didn't get to all that far, but I ended up as assistant manager in charge of the cashier's department in the big overseas division in London, in East Street. And I ran my own patch, had my own staff. Had about reports on the staff and all that sort of thing, you know. Reports on how the business was going, that I was dealing with literally hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of cash, and literally cash, and supplying various banks around London with money, because our customers were banks, not people off the street, because it was overseas. We had our accounts with banks abroad, and they had their accounts with us, and that's how it worked. But it was very interesting, and as I say, rose up through the ranks and basically ended up as managing a department.
As had you had any particular interests outside of childhood interests outside of school? You mentioned trains.
Yes, I'm an avid sort of train buff, which I what's the word I'm trying to think of? Utilise with photography, and you know, I go around. I can't do it now. But I used to go around photographing trains. I've had pictures published in magazines and all sorts, and sort of combine the two.
What was it then that started the interest?
Well, the chap in the bank. He said, "Well, it's an interesting hobby." He said, "Let's go out one day with the club." He belonged to the club, and I didn't. So I went along with them. I found it quite interesting, poking around in railway works and all the rest of it, Swindon and all those. And then realised I should have been in engineering. There you are. That's life. But, I've got a lot of enjoyment out of photography. It's not my only thing I do. I do landscapes, all other things. A lot of my photography is transport. But I did get a photographic pass when I was abroad, and I took my box camera with me, and it survived. I still got it upstairs to go with the rest of the stuff, and that's it. That's basically it. And I came out of when I came out of the forces, I went back into the bank and been there ever since. And I never moved out of East Street. Well, we started off in Gracechurch Street, but then we moved over to East Street, a bigger place. And of course, being the overseas, it was specialised work. And once you were there, you were there. And stayed there till I retired.
What do you remember of the Ealing and Catford areas as you were growing up?
Ealing? Not a lot about Ealing, except I remember my mother and myself. We used to meet her. She used to meet another family, and another wife got a boy about my own age, and we used to meet on Haven Green in Ealing and have a chat and all the rest of it, and we used to come home. And Ealing, I remember the first school, Castle Hill School, I think it was, in West Ealing. My first school was that was in Ealing. Can't remember where it was now. I could take it there, but can't remember. And that was about it. I mean, I didn't tell you much more.
Did you find that that Ealing and then Catford had a strong sort of local sense of local identity and a particular different feel to them as you were living in each area?
Well, at that particular time, no. I mean, everybody was... there weren't any blacks about, if you know what I mean. Not I've got anything against them. Most of them are perfectly genuine, nice people. But having been there 72 years, everything's changed. There's much more in Catford. There's much more crime, as you never heard of any crime in capital in 1934. At least I never heard of it. And the road, Riverview Park, which I lived in, was reckoned to be the best road in Catford at one time. And it was the only road for years and years, and where everybody was white. It was most strange. Nobody could believe it. But then gradually changed. No worse, no better, but the whole place has gone downhill, like everywhere else. I mean, nothing seems to improve anywhere, does it? And
was there a particular point at which that you felt that had happened, or was
it's a gradual thing. Even if you go on holiday, perhaps you go to a place and then you leave it, say, 5 or 6 years, and then go back again. It's never the same. Sort of, you think, oh God. Amusement arcade there, where there was houses and there was something there, and it's never the same. Nothing ever seems to get better. So,
did your mother work?
No. Well, she did. She was she taught teaching. Typewriting. And I'm not sure, but I think that's how my father met her. They worked in the same school. Never inquired. At an early age, you don't worry about things like that. But afterwards, you think to yourself, well, did they or didn't they? But I'm not sure.
Had you any brothers and sisters?
No.
How much were you aware during the 1930s of what was happening in Europe?
Yes, from about 1937, I suppose, I started to think, well, things are going a little bit pear-shaped. And of course, when the war was declared, to a young person, it was like an adventure. Used to go around picking up shrapnel here and there after the raids, and you didn't worry about whether we were going to be under German rule or English rule or anything like that. It was just an adventure. You used to go out and during the raids, perhaps, on your bicycle. Never worried about it. Strange. When you look back. I always remember, too, that while I was abroad, my parents were always going to be back home. They were never going to be bombed or killed. Never once entered my mind, because if they had an arrangement, if I had been killed, or they had been killed rather, I would have been shunted off to Australia, where my father's brother and his wife lived in Melbourne. But everything went well. Our house was damaged during the war, and all repaired and all the rest of it, and there we are.
Did you give, when the war began, had you given any thought to how long it would last and
no.
The possibility of your involvement?
No, nothing at all. I just joined up and hope for the best.
Had your father talked about his First World War experience?
No, he would never talk about it. He was badly knocked up, lost an arm, lost his left arm, shrapnel in his head and back, which was there till his dying day. And he died at the age of 69. He had an awful job to get his pension upgraded. He was backwards and forwards to, I think it was Roehampton. And medically examined each time, no change or whatever. He was on, I think he was on 80% pension. Abysmal. Really was. Because I've got all the papers upstairs. And eventually, after perseverance by my mother and himself, he saw one doctor, because my father got Parkinson's at the end, and the doctor said, just walk down the room for me. I wasn't there, but this is what I heard. And he did, and father's, and the doctor said, this is caused by the war. And he upgraded the pension to 100%. Of course, you know, the average wage in those days was about £5 a week. And, you know, it forces pensions. Like today, they're not all that good. Everything relative, isn't it? So, anyway, he got his 100% and he died in 1960.
What was your parents' attitude to your being to your joining the services?
Oh, there was any problem? No. Just, well, I remember on the station platform, well, cheerio, I'll see you later, sort of thing, you know. Got on the train, waved goodbye, and they waved goodbye, and that was it. I was off. Don't think there was any problem with it.
Would you be able to explain a bit more about the process of enlistment?
Enlistment? Yes, I joined the Air Training Corps in 23rd of December 1941 and stayed there till the 5th of November 1942. And on the 6th of November I was called up. And I went to Innisdale Road Drill Hall, SE-13, for medical. And I passed grade one. I didn't want to fly. I'm not interested in flying. I think my eyesight wasn't good enough. But I had an X-ray and really nearly didn't get in the courses at all because there was a mark on the lungs. So they said, oh dear, I don't think you're fit. But we will take another X-ray. And it was a mark on the plate. Nothing wrong with my lungs at all, so I was in, and that was it. And then I came back, and then you waited for the enlistment notice to go to the number 2 recruit centre at Carvington, nearest railway station, Bedford. And that's where it all started.
What was it that had steered you towards the Air Training Corps and the RAF?
I don't know, really. Just that, I think it was, it might have been the engineering side of it. So I was interested in all sorts of things mechanical. And I think that prompted me to go into training for flight mechanic engines. And that was how it all started. The Air Training Corps, the 1475 Squadron, was located in the sports pavilion of the old Phoenix Sports Ground, which was at the end of Riverview Park. And 5 minutes, I was inside the sports pavilion, which sort of been kitted out for, or taken over and kitted out for training boys.
For that year or so you were in the ATC before you went to Cardington, what was it that you were doing?
I was learning about aero engines. They had a big radial Bristol engine, like it was a radial engine on a big stand there. They used to demonstrate one or two things about the engines and all that. But when I got to Cosford, I learnt about it wasn't the Merlin engine. We learnt on the Kestrel, earlier model, but basically the same, and radial. But I can't recall if there was ever the Kestrel engine at the ATC. It's just the one radial engine, and they taught us all about things like threads, and, you know, light engineering stuff.
And how often were you?
I can't remember how often I went there. It must have been during the evenings, because I was in there in 19... when did I come out of it? It's November 42. I joined the bank in December. No, I was in the bank, that's right. I joined the bank in 1940. So it must have been evenings, whether it was 1 month a week or twice a week, I just don't know now. But I made some very good friends there, and well, we enjoyed it.
How closely did you follow the progress of the war in overseas?
Yes, I was quite interested in it. I was trying to follow the progress. Yeah, you know. Certain aspects I was interested in, but mainly carrying on as normal.
Was there any sense that there might be a German invasion, or that the war would eventually be?
No, never thought about it. There was never going to be an invasion. We were going to win, no doubt. Very strange when you look back. But all the battles going on, and you still listen to the news and all that sort of thing, but it never entered my head that we were going to lose. And according to the reports that you read now, we very nearly did. But there we are. That it was a good thing I didn't think about it.
What happened then when you got to Cardington?
Cardington, I was booked in and kitted out. And I was only there for a few days. And I ended up at Skegness for Square Bash.
What did the booking in and kitting out involve then?
Dishing around with what they call biscuits, which were like mattresses about that size, about that square. They were known as biscuits. You had three of them. And uniform. And you had underclothes, socks, boots, everything that goes with the uniform, and a kit bag, of course, stuff it all into, and all the army type belt, side pack, water bottle, I suppose that's about it, really. You know, might have been knife, fork and spoon, I don't know, but I should imagine you did, because I would think that there must have been cookouts, even though, you know, it was just a signing on point, if you like. And don't like to hear any more about that. Tell you a bit about Skegness.
What were your first impressions of Skegness?
Bloody cold. Oh, it's the middle of winter. And we had to do 5 mile runs. Oh, jeez. Imagine it. Shorts, little shorts, and a singlet.